It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Live it off the wall. Where you give the best sports talk and info in New York.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, now go out and get what you're worth. But you gotta be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you wanna be because of him or her or anybody.
It's an all new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to another Off the Wall show here on YesNetwork.com. I am Joe Auriemma. With me, I have a special guest, Ian Brown from Boston, from our rival right here. He is the Red Sox beat writer for MLB.com, RedSox.com. You can find him on Twitter. And he, on his Twitter account, he is an encyclopedia of 1980s Boston Celtics knowledge. So, Ian, how are you today?
Great. Want to talk about Bird and McHale, or
yeah, let's do a little. Let's start the show off with some Parrish. But really, I want to start the show off with Kevin Youkilis right now. Goes on the DL. He's got the right thumb injury. He's now the 14th member of this Red Sox team to go on the DL at some point this season. What's going on with this team this year?
Yeah, I've never seen anything like this. You know, you're talking about 6 or 9 players on that team's opening day lineup has been on the disabled list at some point this season. It's been, you know, for a significant amount of time in each case. And the Youkilis thing is probably the worst of all, because not only because of what he means to the middle of the lineup, but this is the first injury that, at least right now, it looks like it's season ending. You know, the other injuries, there's always been a light at the end of the tunnel. So I was like, all right, well, when we get this guy back, you know, have him down the stretch. Now, it looks like Kevin Youkilis went to Cleveland today to get a second opinion on that torn ligament in his thumb, but they're going to play it smart with this thing. So by all accounts, it looks like he's going to miss the rest of the season. That's just a crushing blow to this team, and frankly, I'm not sure it's one that they can recover from.
You know, you really do have to give this team a lot of credit, though, Ian, because all year they've been battling that injury bug, and they've kept up right along with the Yankees and the Rays. They've slipped back a little bit, but they're still right there in this race. But you're right, it is a crushing blow to the middle of that order. What can you say about just how this team has played all season and how they've kept with those division leaders, even with everything that they've had to battle through?
Yeah, I think that the guy in the dugout, Terry Francona, deserves a lot of credit for what this team has done this year. For some reason, he's one of those guys who never gets a lot of credit when it comes to manager of the year voting and things like that. But this guy's done a tremendous job this year. His demeanor has never changed. You know, he's just constantly made the new guys who have come in, be it a Darnell McDonald or a Daniel Noah, whoever's come in, made them feel comfortable. Guys like Bill Hall have come in and given the team a spark. So I think that he deserves a lot of credit. And then, obviously the players for not kind of wallowing and kind of keeping their intensity up and trying to do whatever they can to stay in this thing.
Now, you have Beckett back, you have Ellsbury back. Should, put some life, inject some life into this team through the stretch run, do you think this team has a legitimate shot to catch the division leaders?
Well, yeah, they have to play extremely well against those division leaders. And they play the New York Yankees, starting this weekend. They have the 4 games in New York, and then they have another series in New York in late September, so that's 7, and then one more series in Boston to finish the season. So they do have 10 games left against the Yankees, and about that many left against the Tampa Bay Rays also. They really have to play well against those two teams. But, yeah, they have a shot simply because the Red Sox have great starting pitching, and I think that's what can separate them, and that's what can keep them in this race, is their exceptional starting pitching, especially now that Josh Beckett is not only back, but kind of pitching like Josh Beckett that they have expected him to be all year long.
No, you're absolutely right, and that is a way that they definitely can stay in this race. 4-game series this weekend at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox, they would really do themselves some good here if they could go in there, and I know it's a tall order, and I'm not going to say sweep. But if they go in there and take 3 out of 4 You know, that would be do a lot for their psyche and their momentum if they could go in there, pick up two games in the standings by taking three out of four. They have some favorable pitching matchups in the series. The Red Sox have their four best pitchers pitching in the series, and Buchholz, Lackey, Pickett, and Lester in that order. And, you know, the Yankees, if I'm not mistaken, it's not, you know, their best arrangement. I think they have Vasquez opening up the series and Mosley closing it. So it's not the best four. So the Red Sox definitely have an edge in the pitching this series. So I think, you know, like, if they could take three out of four, that would be huge for them at this point in time.
You know, there's one player that really has done so well for the Red Sox this year that I want to talk about, and that's Adrian Beltre. Really, this guy has just had a resurgence this year and playing a great third base. Just offensively, his numbers are off the charts. A legitimate MVP candidate in the American League.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, now that Euclid is out, he is without question, you know, the MVP of this team so far this year. The one guy, really. You know, David Ortiz has stayed healthy also, but he had that bad slump earlier in the year.
Right.
But, you know, Adrian Beltre is the one guy who's really not only stayed in the lineup all year, but been a productive force in the lineup all year. And they get this guy. The funny thing is they get this guy to be a great defender and to maybe hit 260, 265, 20 home run, 80 RBI. He's going to exceed all that. I mean, this is a guy who's been hitting 330, 335, you know, basically all season, hitting with power, hitting driving runs in. And, you know, although he's made a lot of errors, he's also made a lot of great plays on defense. So, yeah, you can't say enough about what, you know, what Adrian Beltre has meant to this team this year, coming off really the worst season of his career last year in Seattle.
It really is amazing. He's turned out to be quite a pickup for Theo Epstein and the Red Sox, and a guy that just keeps rolling along. I know you brought David Ortiz before. He did have that extended slump at the beginning of the season. People were, you know, there was rumblings in Boston, New York, everywhere throughout the country saying, could this be the end of David Ortiz? And boy, he just bounces back. Every time somebody asks that question, he comes up and he puts up the numbers that we expect to see from David Ortiz.
Yeah, he really has. You know, he's got 23 home runs right now, and has just played you know, tremendous for this team. He's back to being that force in the middle of the lineup that Red Sox fans have been accustomed to. And yeah, it's kind of strange. People are so quick to jump again on this guy because he got off to a much worse start. People are forgetting, but he got off to a much worse start in 2009 and didn't hit his first home run until May 20th of last season. And then was, you know, one of the most productive hitters in the AL from June on last year. And I think because he had a poor playoff last year against the Angels, people tend to just remember the Ortiz got off to a bad start and thought he was done being a productive player and, you know, got off to another really bad start this year. They had Mike Lowell there, so they were sort of platooning. But starting on May 1st, I mean, this guy has been a force for the team, really. So, you know, that's been great to see. You know, a big thing for the Red Sox to have him back where he can hit third and fourth again for this team.
Now, I know that the Red Sox and Indians got into a little bit of a scrap the other day. Any fines come down? Any suspensions come down from that series that might affect anything this weekend, or nothing came down yet?
No. Red Sox got a few fines, and, you know, no suspensions. It really kind of things kept under control. So that's good. You hate to see series, you know, like Red Sox Yankees tarnished by suspensions or probably bad enough all the, you know, the injuries the Red Sox have that Yankee fans won't see Dustin Pedroia this weekend and won't see Kevin Euclid. So, you know, you can make a case that they're Boston's two most important hitters in that lineup. So already they're gonna be playing without those two. But, you know, nothing in terms of suspension. So it should be I fully expect it to be a good series, you know, this weekend in New York.
It's always tightly contested. The Yankees and the Red Sox always play the longest games in baseball, and actually they play, you know, the best games in baseball. The rivalry has always been great. Even with the Red Sox, you know, kind of lingering in third place this year, is there still a buzz around Boston this year about, you know, when the Yankees come into town and this upcoming series that's coming up?
Yeah, I think there's a buzz right now because people think, you know, this is the chance maybe the Red Sox have to make hay, you know, a little bit and to, you know, put a dent in that lead. So they'll always be excited about Red Sox-Yankees. Certainly, if the Reds do fall out of the race at some point in time this year, you know, a lot of that buzz is going to be lost. But the Red Sox are hoping that they still have that run. And the Red Sox haven't had that great run this year.
Yeah.
So they, you know, Theo Epstein alluded to this the other day, the day of the trading deadline, that, you know, they still hope that run is in them. And they still hope that they could really make this, you know, a fun race at some point. So, yeah, nobody's given up around here just yet. There's still a lot of baseball left, in the season. I think about 57, 58 games, something like that. They're still hopeful that the Red Sox have that great run in them. And, you know, these three teams might be the best three teams in baseball when they're all healthy. I think they are.
These three teams make it the most dominant division in baseball. I completely agree with you. I actually wanted to ask you about the trading deadline as well. Theo Epstein doesn't make any major moves. Was it a bit of a shock to the beat writers and to the town of Boston?
No, for a couple reasons. You know, the first is that the Red Sox had so many guys coming back from injuries that it was almost like they were getting their own trade deadline acquisitions, be it Josh Beckett, you know, be it Jacoby Ellsbury, be it, Dustin Pedroia here in the near future, be it maybe Jason Varitek at some point.
Right.
So that and the fact that they were kind of like on the borderline of, where they're four or five games back, so you don't know if they're still going to be in it. So it's almost like you want to give up a big chip if you might not get back in the pennant race.
Right.
So what Theo is doing here, he's seeing what the team does in August, because if they can get hot in August, as he was talking about that hot streak the other day, close the gap, you know, show the front office, show the fans that the team is ready to make a run, then Theo will make some moves, because Theo Epstein is very adept at making moves in August. You know, guys clear waivers in this day and age with financial restrictions and things like that, and teams not wanting to pick up financial burden. So
right.
You know, last year in August, the Sox got Billy Wagner and they got Alex Gonzalez, two guys who put a pivotal role in their stretch run. You know, Theo's perfectly willing to make moves like that again, you know, provided the team can chip two, three, four games off this deficit right now and show they're going to be in this thing.
Right. And look, you cover the Red Sox. You have a thumb print on the Red Sox. You do a great job. This is Ian Brown. He's the Red Sox beat reporter for MLB.com. Ian, I just want to ask you, looking at the Yankees and the Rays, the two teams that the Red Sox have to compete in, what has impressed you most about these two teams? And what do you think actually, the Red Sox gives that Red Sox fan a chance to say, you know what, they are impressive, but there is this hope right here that we can catch them.
Yeah, with the Rays, I think just the pitching that they can throw out there. Their bullpen, is just so improved now with Soriano closing games. The one thing, you know, I don't think the Rays lineup is, like, all that impressive, overpowering.
Yeah.
So I think that gives them hope there. On the Yankees, you know, what impresses me the most about them is just, you know, how battle-tested they are, how kind of championship-driven they are at this point. And these guys all know. I think last year gave them confidence that, you know, they can win in any situation. I think before that there was some doubt because they hadn't really done anything during the whole A-Rod era as far as winning championships. You know, that's a championship team right now with guys who have been there, done that. And, they have a lot of weapons on that team offensively. And Sabathia is such a great pitcher. They're an impressive team. But, you know, there's something that gives me hope that the Yankees are an older team.
Right.
And they've had more injuries this year. Jeter's not having the same year that he's had in the past. Pettit's out right now. Rivera had some health problems. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the age on the Yankees, I think that's what gives the Red Sox a little bit hope there.
I wanted to actually ask you about Alex Rodriguez now. There was a big buzz in New York about, you know, his 600th home run. We all know, you know, the controversy surrounding Alex, you know, over his whole career, not just the PED issue. But was there a buzz in Boston about A-Rod, or is it just kind of business as usual? Oh, he hit the 600th home run and we move on.
Yeah, you pegged it. You know, there's really no buzz. And it's
yeah.
Just like, yeah, it's a shame because, you know, the whole thing with, last year when he was, basically Sports Illustrated broke that story and A-Rod admitted, hey, I did steroids when I played for the Texas Rangers. So immediately, it's 600 home runs, but you know, the guy admitted it himself. You know,
right.
that not all of them were on an even playing field, that he was chemically induced for a bunch of those home runs. So, yeah, it's not, this isn't like a great story, you know, like some past guys, hitting 600 home runs, or even like when Reggie Jackson hit 500 home runs,
right.
Or, you know, something like that. Just, you know, this is just a sign of the year. It's not just Alex Rodriguez. It's not the New York Yankees. It's baseball as a whole. These numbers don't mean what they once did, because you don't know the era. The era has been exposed. You don't know who did what, who did it clean and who didn't do it clean. So I think that's what takes away from it. But, there's never going to be any love between Red Sox fans and Alex Rodriguez. I mean, he is enemy number one as far as these fans here are concerned.
Yes, that is very true. I want to talk about Mike Lowell real quick. There was a rumor going around that, you know, Mike Lowell actually might have been involved in a three-way trade where he might have come to the Yankees before the trade deadline. You know, and now the Red Sox have kept him to this point in the year. You know, he's a valuable piece. He's another one of those guys. You said he's battle tested and championship tested. Do you see the Red Sox using him in a big role through the stretch run of the season?
Yeah, you know, now suddenly, you know, Mike Will has a role in the team again with Euclid out. Mike
right.
Will is going to play, you know, a good share of first base. Not going to play every single day because his body, he's got the arthritic hip. His body's going to break down at certain times. So he's certainly going to play. He gives them a real threat against left-handed pitching. So he's certainly going to play against all lefties. I think what the Red Sox are going to do here, and they should know more about Euc maybe as early as today because he was in Cleveland getting a second opinion on that time. But assuming Euclid can't come back, I really think Steve Epstein's going to do everything he can to go out and get a left-handed hitting first baseman that they can sort of platoon with Mike Lowell.
Right.
You can't really replace Kevin Euclid with one guy, but maybe you can help replace him, you know, with a nice platoon of Lowell and, you know, a pretty good left-handed hitter as well. So I think that's but yeah, so it certainly ended up being a blessing in disguise that they didn't trade Mike Lowell, who all of a sudden, you know, he's a guy that's immensely popular in this team as it is, especially with the fan base and in that clubhouse. But now suddenly there's a big need for him on this team.
Ian, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I actually want you to give yourself a pop here because when it comes down to it, Yankees fans are concerned about what's going on with the Red Sox. Red Sox fans are concerned all the time about what's going on with the Yankees. Both fan bases really have a pulse on both of the teams. So I want Yankee fans to know because you do a tremendous job. Tell them where you're at. Tell them what you write about on a daily basis and really just get your name out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm writing for RedSox.com and MLB.com every day. I'm tweeting basically everything I know about the Red Sox. The Twitter's Ian M. Brown, and the Brown with an E at the end. And I also write a blog called Brownie Points off of the RedSox.com homepage. So, yeah, I think it is neat how, you know, Yankees fans kind of keep close tabs on the Red Sox, and Red Sox fans kind of keep close tabs on the Yankee, and hopefully read my good friend Brian Hoke over at MLB.com, who does a great job also.
Absolutely.
You know, so yeah, I think it is great that you have that rivalry where each team's fan base is really kind of keeping tabs on what's going on with the other team.
Like I always say, there might be three heavyweights in this division, but you know, the Yankee fans and Red Sox fans will always have a special place for that rivalry. Whether the team's in first place or last place, they really know what's going on with both franchises.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's fun to be a part of that rivalry and even cover those games. I'll be excited to you know, get to Yankee Stadium. There's always just a special buzz for those games, you know, whether it's April. But, you know, I really, to tell you the truth, I really enjoy the time of year, Red and Yankees games in August and in September when both teams still have a chance. You know, That's kind of what intense baseball is all about, really.
You're right. This is the dog days of summer, and Ian, you do a great job covering this team on a day-to-day basis. And you mentioned our buddy Brian Hoke over at Yankees.com as well. I will see you at the stadium this weekend, and thanks for joining us here on Off the Wall.
All right, I look forward to meeting you.
All right, thanks, Ian. That was Ian Brown of RedSox.com. I'm Joe Auriemma. Keep it right here. Chris Sheeran joins the show and joins the conversation to talk about Alex Rodriguez and his 600th home run. Keep it right here on Off the Wall. Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee blog on the web. It's The Blob with Bob Lorenz, Keeping Up with the Jones with Jim Jones, River Ave Blues, and much, much more. For wall-to-wall Yankees, it's YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Good stuff out of you, Joe. We're back on the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Joe and Ian Brown.
Yes, sir.
Talking some Yankees Red Sox.
Yeah,
he's
got his thumbprint all over that series. He's really good. It sounded really good.
Moving on now, we talk a little Bombers baseball here, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the milestone achieved by Alex Rodriguez. And we're not going to take this from the actual milestone point of view, but Joe and I are going to take this from, you know, this guy was 0-17.
Yeah.
The team was on a 3-game losing streak. It just seemed like, and I heard Jack Curry say this, our Jack Curry, you know, sometimes when one player is going for something like this, it can get through the whole clubhouse.
Right.
I mean, it could affect all the players. And I didn't really think about that until Jack said it. That's why Jack is so damn good at what he does. But you kind of got that feeling like that 7-game road trip, the Yankees didn't lose every game. They won some games on that 7-game road trip. But you started to sense the longer Alex went without getting this thing, the more it was going around the clubhouse and maybe affecting everybody, well, except Nick Swisher.
Yeah, nothing affects Nick Swisher. No. I completely agree with what Jack is saying. I've heard, you know, other people around the office and around the stadium say that, you know, no, it didn't affect the whole team. It just, they felt it affected Alex. Well, to me, when you have a guy in the middle of your order that went 0-17, okay, you know what? If he's not hitting because he's got a lot of pressure on him with this record on his head, yeah, one correlates with the other. Him not hitting affects the whole team.
He's your cleanup hitter. Right. Everything revolves. He's like the sun, and the other batters in the order are the planets. They revolve around him. He's the one that drives people in. He's the one that gets things going. And when he's 0-17, you're not going to win too many games.
Right. And the other point is that it does, once it gets into the clubhouse, you know, can we just kind of get this thing done and over with? I think it did weigh down a little bit on the team. I think it was there. But now I think now that it's done and over with, they can just take care of business. And you saw it. They looked a little, once the home run was done in the first inning, which was a good thing that it got done in the first inning, it felt like there was a weight lifted from the whole game. It really did.
Well, they're going to have to go through it again when 700 rolls around, too.
Yeah, it's true.
And then 763. So it's just going to be, it's a circus-type atmosphere. But just to give you a little food for thought, the fastest is 600 home runs by age. Alex is obviously first.
35 and 8 days, right?
Yeah, Babe Ruth is second, 36 years, 196 days. But Babe did it in 2,044 games. He did it in almost 200 games less.
Don't forget, Babe Ruth started his career as a pitcher, so he didn't get as many at-bats. He didn't.
Just saying, in the sheer magnitude of things.
That's pretty amazing.
In over 200 games less than Alex, he got 600 home runs. Hank Aaron, 37 years, 81 days. Barry Bonds, 38, 16. Willie Mays, 38, 139. Ken Griffey, 38, 201. And Sammy Sosa, 38, 220. So Alex is the youngest to do it. And here's something else for everybody to think about. Up until a couple of years ago, the 600 home run club had three people. And it had three people for a very long time.
Babe, in fact, Hank, and Willie Mays.
In over 100 years of baseball, only three guys did that.
How about the span between Babe Ruth and then when Hank Aaron and Willie Mays did it?
Right.
So there was just one for a very long time.
Food for thought. That's all I'm saying. Now there's seven people.
You'd have to figure that at the pace Ken Griffey Jr. was going,
He got hurt way too much.
You had to think he was going to make it. And the pace Alex is on, you had to figure he was going to make it. I get it, but yeah, I see what you're saying. I definitely see what you're saying.
So anyway, so there's seven people now in the 600 or more home run club. Barry Bonds, Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, Ken Griffey Jr., Sammy Sosa, and now Alex Rodriguez. So think about that. In the history of the game, seven people.
It's pretty wild.
And three were before, who was the first one to reach it? Barry, 600?
Yeah. Of this group, yes, Barry.
Barry hit it, then
Barry actually blew by it.
Yeah, Barry.
The guy hit 73 home runs in the season.
He hit 600, and then he just passed everybody.
Yeah, he hit the 73 home runs. That'll do it.
So it's a tremendous accomplishment, 600 homers. And now we start to move on, and the next one on the list to pass is obviously Sammy Sosa. And then he'll start going towards Ken Griffey Jr. And then Willie Mays, his 660, correct?
Yes, 660 is correct.
660 for Willie Mays.
714 for Babe Ruth, 755 for Hank Aaron, 762 for Barry Bonds.
Yeah, Ken Griffey Jr. has 630. So I don't think we're going to see him reach Ken Griffey Jr. this year, his former teammate in Seattle, but Sammy Sosa is in trouble.
Sammy Sosa is in reach. And now, Chris, my question to you is, on the pace Alex was going on a couple of years ago, and now the pace that he seems to have slowed down to, do you think, I think it was a couple of years ago we were saying it's inevitable that he's going to break the home run record. He's going to be the home run king when it's all said and done. Do you think that now it's a very good possibility that he won't be the home run king?
It depends. I know he's slowed down a little bit. It just depends on if he stays healthy and how long he could stay healthy. We were just talking off microphone about your little foray into ESPN radio the other day about Hank Aaron and what he did after 35. And if Alex Rodriguez is able to duplicate what Hank Aaron did, and if you want to throw those numbers out right. for everybody out there now, that would be great.
Hank Aaron, after the age of 35, at 36 years old, he hit 38 home runs. At 37 years old, he hit 47 home runs. At 38, he hit 34 home runs. And at 39 years old, he hit 40 home runs. Now, he did decline after that. He hit 20 at 40, and then only 22 combined the rest of the way for the next two seasons, a 10 and a 12 season. So he did decline after that. But if Alex can have just even two of those seasons that Hank Aaron had, let's say he has the 38 and the 40, well, that certainly does decrease the average. That's 78 home runs. That puts him in the 678 range, and that really makes the rest of the way look pretty easy.
Now, I have to say this, or else I wouldn't be, let's face it, I wouldn't be me. I put all my eggs into one basket when all this steroid stuff started coming out, and that one basket was Alex Rodriguez. My life revolves around this sport. I was taught to respect it from a very young age. Mm-hmm. My father played semi-pro baseball. It's been in my blood. I still play. In my whole life, it's been in my blood. When all this steroid stuff was coming about, I thought the one person who was going to bring everything back full circle and make people believe in this sport once again, like Santa Claus, was Alex Rodriguez. Having said that, it did kind of devastate me when he came out and said, He did steroids for those years in Texas because of my respect for the game and because of what I thought, you know, just the freak of nature that he was. I really, really thought he was no way he was taking this stuff.
Right.
So did I lose some respect for him? Of course I did. I'm sure a lot of people have. But here's the one thing that gets him some respect back in my eyes. And you might think I'm stupid for saying this, but Alex is a lightning rod for a lot of people. You know, the guy can't do anything right. Everything revolves around him. If he strikes out in a big spot, he stinks. If he hits a home run when the Yankees are winning big, oh, that's the only time he hits a home run. If he hits a home run when the Yankees are losing, oh, that's the only time he hits a home run. Listen, go back to the playoffs last year. How many times he saved a game. Okay? I know this guy is a lightning rod. I know. Well, that's what happens when you're the best at what you do. People love you. People hate you. Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant. These are guys who have love-hate relationships with fans. If he's on your team, you love him. If he's not, you hate him. But here's where I'm going with this. This is where Alex gets some respect back. In my eyes, doesn't have to be yours. This is my opinion, not your opinion. And thank you for letting me do this. He admitted it. He's not hiding behind it. At least the man had the common decency to come out and say, yes, I did it. When this stuff came out about him, he could have denied it. He didn't have to admit it. He could have kept hiding behind it. He didn't, though. He took responsibility. He's helping with awareness for steroids. And he's getting his image. Not back, because before this, he didn't really have an image. No one gave a crap about him unless he was wearing their colors. He is building an image now and into the future. So regardless of what you think of this guy, he is doing something. He did something for steroid awareness by admitting he did it. He copped to it. Now he's helping out. He's doing charity work. And to everyone out there who did it and cheated and got away with it, think about this. You made this guy, but he came clean.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Hey, you know what, Chris? That's you make very valid points. At the end of the day, you know, he is the home run king when it's all said and done. I think he's going to go into the Hall of Fame. I think he has to go into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, you look at guys like Bonds and Sosa and Maguire and Palmeiro, all guys that have been linked to it. You know, the image that's burned into everybody's skull is Palmeiro wagging his finger at
Sammy
Congress.
Sosa and, forgot to speak English.
Mark Maguire playing dumb. I mean, it just... that whole era was a joke, and they still haven't copped to it.
Well,
and Alex, you're right, did cop to it, and now he's moving on with his life. And if people want to say that, well, his home run production is down because he, you know, he isn't using it anymore, well, I can't agree with that either, because the man is, he had a major hip injury last year, and hips, when you're hitting, are a huge part of
it. It goes back to what I said. The man was a freak. He's just a freak of nature. Like, when it comes to the sport of baseball, he is built for baseball. That stuff just aided it.
Right.
I truly believe, like, when you used to watch this guy play when he was a 18, 19-year-old kid in Seattle, you were just like, wow. He is, like, the prototypical baseball player. Like, if there was a mold for a baseball player,
yeah,
when he was 18, 19 years old, it was him.
No, you're right.
Like, with Han Solo in the Carbonite. You want to make more A-Rods. You know, Jabba the Hutt could make an army of A-Rods. But I just want everyone to know that's listening that hurt me. Like, personally, it did. But I can move on. Because he's moving on. And he's, you know, he's doing this stuff to help bring awareness to steroids and you know, you could continue, like, if you're not a Yankee fan and you just can't stand it, you could continue to just hate the Yankees and hate Alex Rodriguez. That's your opinion, and that's fine. You're allowed to do that. I'm looking at this from a perspective in which, yeah, the guy was wrong for what he did, but at least he took the steps necessary to take the train and get it back on track. And that's what Alex Rodriguez did. So you can get up, you know, turn your back to what he did and look the other way for the rest of the time he's going after Barry Bonds and all these other guys.
And that's totally fine.
That's fine.
That's their opinion.
Your God-given right. But I have to give the guy a chance. I have to. Look, I said my piece. I wanted everyone to know before I said what I said, why it hurt me so much. And it's because of the respect I have for the game. It's because of all those eggs that I put in one basket. Saying to myself, he's going to bring everybody back. And then when he came out and said it, I was like, here we go. Who's going to do it now? You know, he was like the savior.
Right.
And maybe he could still do that. Maybe he can. You know, he admitted to it. This is a very forgiving country. Mike Tyson is now on late night talk shows after biting someone's ear off.
He also has his own show about pigeons.
Yeah, everybody loves him. He's raising pigeons on the Discovery Channel or something. I don't know.
But with that being said, we're going to end on a happy note. We're going to be here to witness Alex's big chase through 600 and 700. And Yankee fans are going to be able to see this. And next year, you're going to see Derek Jeter have his 3,000th hit. So a lot of big milestones coming up for Yankees and Yankees fans.
Don't skip over the 28th World Championship this October.
No, that's true, too.
And November. Does it go into November this year?
I'm sure it does. Okay. I'm sure it's going to go into December soon. So.
All right. And on that note, that's going to wrap things up. Thanks once again to Ian Brown, getting us ready for the Red Sox and Yankees wraparound set this weekend. For Joe Auriemma, I'm Chris Sheeran. We will see you next time here on the Off the Wall podcast, and I won't be so melancholy. See you, everybody. When the world is on your shoulder. With the pie.
shell and just enjoy yourself. Groove, let the madness and the music get to you. Life ain't so bad at all.
You live it off the wall.
Life ain't so bad.